Whoa, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record for Wednesday, February 11th, 2026. We begin our reading on the front page, Suspicious Fires in Gibson City. Sister joins her brother in jail, charged with aggravated arson. Penny Leisure, age 62, of Paxton, facing same Class X felony as brother Roger, age 71. Gibson City. A little over a month after her brother was charged with aggravated arson for allegedly setting fire to his apartment in Gibson City, a Paxton woman has been charged with the same crime in connection with a second suspected arson at the same apartment building. Ford County Circuit Court records show that Penny S. Leisure, 62, was charged with one count of aggravated arson, a Class X felony, on Monday, February 2nd, barely over a month after the same charge was filed against her brother, Roger D. Leisure. Both are accused of setting fire to the schoolhouse apartments at 200 North Melvin Street, according to charging documents filed by State's Attorney Andrew Killian. In Penny Leisure's case, a status hearing has been set for 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 14th, following the completion of a court-ordered mental health evaluation by Dr. Lawrence Jekyll to determine her fitness to stand trial and participate in her own defense. She appeared in court for a detention hearing on Tuesday, February 3rd, alongside her court-appointed public defender, Lance Cagle of Paxton. During the hearing, Cagle requested the fitness evaluation while Killian filed a petition seeking the denial of her pretrial release. Judge Matt Fitton ordered her detained pending the results of the fitness evaluation. Charging documents allege that Penny Leisure committed arson at the schoolhouse apartments on Saturday, January 31st, when she reasonably should have known there were people present. According to Gibson Fire Chief Bruce Kalal, the fire caused an estimated $20,000 in damage. The apartment where the fire began, apartment 205, sustained fire, smoke, and water damage, Kalal said, while adjacent apartments beside and below suffered possible smoke or water damage. The fire's cause was investigated by the Office of the State Fire Marshal and Gibson City Police. An occupant was assisted out of apartment 205 for treatment by Gibson Area Ambulance Service, Kalel said in a news release. We are not aware of the occupant being transported from the scene. Barely a month earlier, Roger Leisure was arrested and charged with aggravated arson for allegedly setting fire to his second-floor apartment the day after Christmas. He remains detained through trial, with his jury trial set for 9 a.m. Monday, March 16th. Luckily, the smoke was pretty well contained to that apartment, with the fire contained to the spot of origin, Kalal said. The apartment and an apartment below it suffered water damage from the sprinkler going off, and there was a small amount of fire damage in the second-floor apartment. If convicted of the Class X felony, each of the siblings faces a mandatory sentence ranging from 6 to 30 years in prison, up to a $25,000 fine, and possible restitution. Gibson City Police Chief Adam Rosendahl and Killian did not immediately return messages seeking additional comment. Also on the front page from the Ford County Board, frustrations spill out. Ford County's Deputy EMA Coordinator resigns over concerns as Iroquois County's EMA Coordinator pulls help with training. Paxton. Concerns about Terry Whitebird's leadership as coordinator of the Ford County Emergency Management Agency spilled into public view this week, after his deputy coordinator and a longtime agency volunteer both resigned effective immediately, and neighboring Iroquois County's EMA said it would no longer help Whitebird's agency with its mandated training exercises. Some of the same frustrations expressed by former Deputy EMA Coordinator Danny Neal, including his claim that Whitebird declined the help that I have arranged by the state and neighboring counties to meet our mandated deliverables, grants, and training exercises, were shared by Iroquois County EMA Coordinator Scott Anderson in separate letters sent to Whitebird and obtained by the Ford County Chronicle this week. Unfortunately, I feel like much of the efforts I have recently tried to provide to get our county in good standing with the Illinois Emergency Management Agency have gone largely ignored or flat-out denied, Neal said in a statement to the Chronicle. The growing frustration of never hitting deliverables on time, strained relationships with other county departments, and inconsistencies has led me to tender my resignation as Deputy Coordinator of the Ford County EMA. The Iroquois County's EMA's Anderson, in a letter last week to Whitebird, said his agency will no longer take the time or effort to assist Ford County EMA with the planning or facilitation of any of your upcoming training exercises, adding that the man hours from my office that have already been invested and your refusal to put that assistance into practice have forced me to make this difficult decision. Ford County Board on Monday, February 9th, heard brief remarks about the situation from Whitebird, who earlier declined to make any immediate comments to the Ford County Chronicle. The coordinator over there in Iroquois County basically got into an argument with me twice over the phone, Whitebird said of Anderson, asking me about what I do every day, what I do for the county, what you guys pay me for. In his letter to Whitebird, Anderson said that, in addition to no longer helping Ford County's EMA with its mandated training exercises, I will also be reviewing any EMA-related intergovernmental agreements that are in place between Ford and Iroquois counties and potentially void those agreements. This is due to what appears to be the unprepared nature of Ford County EMA regarding assistance at possible future incidents, Anderson wrote to Whitebird, following your public admission to me that you have not held any core capability training exercises within the last 7 years of your tenure, I will not risk the residents of Iroquois County by having assistance come from someone that will not meet our basic standards. I also request that you refrain from attending or responding to incidents or training that may occur in Iroquois County from this notice forward. The reason for this decision is contained within the paragraph above. I have also accepted your resignation as a volunteer with the Iroquois County EMA, and you have been removed from my roster. If you or your county situation changes in the future, I may be willing to re-examine the terms contained within this communication. Anderson told the Chronicle on Monday that Iroquois County Board Chairman Paul Ducat of Chevenix was aware of his letter to Whitebird and was in support of the measures as stated. Anderson otherwise declined to make any further public comment at this time. During Monday's Ford County Board meeting, Whitebird distributed information about the core capabilities that his agency is required by the Illinois Emergency Management Agency to test to prepare for various levels of threats. Some of those exercises, though, were not yet done, Whitebird acknowledged. Every 3 years, the EMA is required to do a full-scale, a functional, and a tabletop or seminar-type training exercise, but only the full-scale exercise has been fulfilled since Whitebird became EMA coordinator in January of 2019. During that time, we had the real-world exercise of COVID in 2020, and they also gave us real-world credit for the Gibson City flood of August 2021, Whitebird told the board. The other ones we have not done. Whitebird said he is working to get the remaining mandated trainings done soon, though. Right now, we have two that we're working on putting together, Whitebird said. We were supposed to have one in January, and we did a planning meeting of it, but We weren't totally ready for it, so we decided to table that and prepare more. In the meantime, my deputy has resigned, and one of my volunteers, Jason Madden, has resigned. So this is what I have to do basically on my own. Because my deputy, he hardly ever came into his office. I don't know what he did half the time. But like I said, this gives you guys an idea of where we're at. I wanted to explain it to you guys, the way things are. Board member Tim Nuss of Roberts then asked Whitebird, "Are you familiar with Richard Williams?" "He is our regional coordinator for the IEMA's Region 7, Whitebird said, "and I've been working with him. We just had a meeting last Tuesday, February 3rd, with him here in Paxton. We got some stuff ironed out. I'm going to get the tabletops put together by the 28th of February, and then I'm supposed to reconvene with him on that," replied Nuss. "I'd like to definitely see us sit down with Mr. Williams to see if everybody's on the same page with what's going on with Ford County EMA." The board's chairman, Chase McCall of Gibson City, then asked Whitebird to share that tabletop exercise that you're going to get started, noting that he believed that that would probably be a good forum for that. In his February 6th resignation letter to Whitebird, Neil said his decision comes based on the realization that my professional growth is not progressing as I thought it would have. It is also hard to develop and mature as an EMA professional when I have been accused of lying, being untrustworthy, and trying to control who I am allowed to speak with, Neil wrote. It is important for Ford County to grow new and strengthen existing relationships between partners, and I feel we are moving in the wrong direction. I need to step away to search for other opportunities that will further strengthen my professional future in emergency management. In a follow-up statement to the Chronicle, Neil wrote, "My passion and drive to help mitigate, respond, and recover from emergencies in Ford County is as strong as ever. The work I already put in has benefited our residents greatly and has also propelled me into the next chapter of my professional development, wherever that may be. I am not closing the door on Ford County or its residents and hope to one day serve you again." Also at the meeting, the board's Highway Committee Chairman, Tim Nuss of Roberts, said the Tri-County Rural Transportation Committee for Ford, Iroquois, and Livingston counties would be meeting at 9 a.m. at the Highway Department building in Roberts on Tuesday, February 17th, to further discuss options for reviving the public transportation in Ford and Iroquois counties following the recent shutdown of their previous service provider, the Chris Rural Mass Transit District. Board member Cindy Erke of Rural Roberts said Livingston County's provider, Futures, has been keeping up with offering rides in Ford County as official, more permanent arrangements continue to be explored. "It is in the works still for them to hopefully take over services here in Ford County," Erke said. "It looks like they will be able to do it. They don't have any official paperwork done on it yet, but they are currently providing rides if people need them." There's an article from the Gibson City Council on the front page. Narcan needle disposal sites in city receive council's nod. Ford County recorded 3 fatal drug overdoses in December. In Gibson City, free Narcan kits and a used needle disposable container will soon be available at 2 locations in Gibson City after the City Council approved a request from the Ford County Public Health Department at Monday night's meeting. Ford County Public Health Department's communicable disease nurse Betty K. Benningfield asked the council for permission to place the Narcan kits and a Sharps disposal containers in town and sought suggestions for appropriate location. She said Narcan and a Sharps depository are already available at a local laundromat and are being used regularly. "There is definitely a need," she said. "I have replaced 4 dozen boxes of 2 doses of Narcan each since November." Narcan is a potentially life-saving drug administered to reverse drug overdoses. Benningfield said Ford County recorded 3 fatal drug overdoses in December, and she suspects there were additional non-fatal overdose calls to emergency services, too. Benningfield has asked that those statistics be shared to better understand the scope of the issue. Benningfield initially suggested placing both Narcan and a Sharps container at Gibson City's North Park. Superintendent of Streets and Alleys Tyler Martin objected, though, echoing concerns voiced by several council members. "I would want them away from the park," Martin said. "That is our main place in town, and it's a kid-friendly area." Council members also expressed concern about the potential for vandalism of the supply boxes. Benningfield emphasized that Narcan is safe and will not harm someone if administered when it is not needed. After Benningfield asked for alternative suggestions, Alderman Laura Miller volunteered to host the containers outside of her bowling alley. Council members agreed that doing so would give the community access to Narcan and needle disposals on both sides of town. Benningfield said she hopes to add more locations in the future. Benningfield also reported that she is working with Casey's corporate offices to make Narcan available at its stores. In addition, Hudson Drug and Hallmark Shop in Paxton is receiving Narcan kits, and Benningfield plans to meet next with the Paxton City Council and request permission for additional distribution sites there. She said Piper City and Kempton also now offer access to the life-saving drug. Benningfield added that the self-serve free vending machine on the Ford County Public Health Department office at 1500 West Ottawa Road in Paxton offers Narcan, a Sharps disposal container, CPR face shields, fentanyl test strips, and safe sex kits to the public. And also from the Gibson City Council, construction of pool to begin this spring in Gibson City. Plans are underway for construction to begin in March for Gibson City's new outdoor public swimming pool at the North Park, with projected substantial completion projected by November, Mayor Daniel Dickey said. The new pool will be built to the east of the existing public pool by Bear Construction of Rolling Meadows. The existing pool will be open for 2026 as construction occurs. The city held an initial construction planning meeting on January 2nd with engineers from Fair Graham of Champaign to determine the construction timeline for the project. Dickey said a pool construction committee will meet monthly to monitor progress. A new pool has been planned for 6 years in Gibson City. "We were patient and took our time," said Dickey. "We wanted to do it right." Dickey said a new sales tax to support the pool is generating income to pay for the project, and 100% of the proceeds from the sales tax will go toward paying down the pool debt. "The new pool will be heated," Dickey said, "which could allow for the swimming season to be extended." Dickey suggested that for extended opening times, the pool could be open to private organizations such as supervised water aerobics classes or the local swim team, so there would be no need to staff the pool with lifeguards and then as normally required for public swim. The pool staff and lifeguards are generally recruited from students who can work summer hours when school is not in session. One of the first tasks of the project will be to move a metal building on the building site to the wastewater plant, said Dickey, noting the move will provide the needed storage for city equipment. The city made arrangements to store the swim team's equipment and other supplies for the pool off-site for the coming season. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, February 11th. Karen R. Carpenter, Champaign. Karen Ray Carpenter of Champaign, formerly of Paxton, died at 12:42 p.m. Tuesday, January 29th, at Haven of Meadowbrook in Champaign. The memorial service was held Wednesday, February 11th at Bayer Family Funeral Services in Paxton, followed by burial in Glen Cemetery. Michael E. Madara, Streeter. Michael E. Madara, 61, of Streeter, died Monday, February 2nd at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana with his daughter and son-in-law by his side. Funeral services were held Thursday, February 12th at the Winter Road Funeral Home in Streeter. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Liver Foundation or to Alcoholics Anonymous. James R. McKeever, Shorewood. James R. McKeever, 95, of Shorewood, formerly of Gibson City, died Thursday, January 29th, surrounded by his family at Loyola Medical Center in Maywood. Private burial will be at a later date in the Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorials can be made in his name to the Moyer District Library in Gibson City. Nancy Pritchett, Piper City. Nancy Pennycook Pritchett, 73, of Piper City, died on Friday, January 30th, at her home. Memorial services were held Saturday, February 7th, at the Onarga Christian Church. Ronald G. Shelby, Kempton. Ronald G. Shelby, 64, of Kempton, died Tuesday, February 3rd. Funeral, private burial will be held. Ella E. Tice, Gibson City. Ella E. Tice, 85, of Gibson City, died Sunday, February 1st, at her home, surrounded by loved ones. At her request, private cremation services will be held. Memorial contributions may be made to CATSNAP, 1713 State Street in Champaign. Wilma L. Ziedler, Buckley. Wilma L. Ziedler, 98, of Buckley, died at 11:20 p.m. February 5th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pels. Funeral services were held Tuesday, February 10th at St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley with the Reverend J. Kevin Wyckoff officiating. Burial followed in St. John's Cemetery in rural Buckley. Memorials may be made to St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley or to St. Paul's Lutheran Church at Woodworth. We return to the news with the latest in the Pacey case. Lawsuit versus Paxton-Buckley-Lota School District. Attorney asked judge to deny PBL's partial motion to dismiss. Motion hearing set for Monday, February 23rd in consolidated lawsuits against the district. The attorney, Paxton, the attorney for five current and former Paxton-Buckley-Lota students suing the district over claims they were inappropriately touched and harassed by teacher and former coach Rob Pacey, argued in a recent court filing that the district can be held vicariously liable under the legal theory of respondeat superior and PBL's partial motion to dismiss should be denied. The district's attorney, Michael Bersani of Itasca, filed the partial motion to dismiss on December 12th, seeking the dismissal of the respondeat superior liability claims made against PBL. Under Illinois law, an employer is not vicariously liable for an employee's willful and wanton intentional or criminal acts if those acts occur outside the scope of employment, a memorandum attached to the motion said. The sexual misconduct of an employee serves only the employee's personal benefit or gain and therefore is not and cannot be connected to his employment. In a response filed January 30th, the plaintiff's attorney, Bhavni Ravindran of Chicago, argued in opposition to Bersani's motion, Ravindran noted that Pacey was always acting in the scope of his employment on school premises and in his capacity as coach and teacher. Plaintiffs allege that defendant Pacey engaged in conduct that led to the assault, battery, and infliction of emotional distress, including but not limited to sexual assaults and harassment of the plaintiffs, Ravindran's response said. It can be reasonably inferred from plaintiff's complaint that the non-consensual touching occurred under the auspices of coaching, stretching, disciplining, and teaching, all of which could both further defendant Pacey's individual interests as well as those of the school, such as the success of their school's track and field program. Defendant PBL ignores in its argument the numerous allegations put forward regarding the conduct of defendant Pacey that do not amount to sexual assault or criminal acts that cause plaintiff's damages. Respondeat superior should still apply to plaintiff's allegations that defendant Pacey engaged in gendered harassment, physically disciplining students for speaking, giving inappropriate attention and placing his hands on plaintiffs when they were changing, doing exercises, or stretching, or training, or interacting with students in class. Plaintiff does not allege that defendant PBL should face respondeat superior liability for solely sexual assaults of defendant Pacey, but rather that defendant PBL is liable for the actions of defendant Pacey that were within the scope of his employment as adequately pled by plaintiffs that caused the injuries. McLean County Judge Rebecca Foley, who is presiding over the civil case, has given Bersani until Friday, February 13th, to file a response to Ravindran's response, with the next hearing set for 10:30 a.m., Monday, February 23rd, via Zoom. Depending on the hearing's outcome, Foley told attorneys last month that the setting of initial deadlines for the issuance of written discovery could follow. The lawsuits, which were filed in Ford County Circuit Court last summer and have since been consolidated into one case, allege that Pacey, a teacher and one-time coach at PBL District, inappropriately touched female students during the course of his 17 years of employment, and that administrators failed to properly investigate and address students' claims of misconduct, ignoring the district's own policies by never notifying the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services as required. Besides the school district, named as defendants are Pacey, who was suspended last spring from his position as a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary School, plus PBL Junior High School Principal Josh Didier, and former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure. Pacey has not been criminally charged and has denied any wrongdoing. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.